Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitangtham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitangscha Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Mukam Karati Bachalam Pangolanghayate Girim Yatkripata Mahangvande Paramananda Madhavam Nama Shrestam Manamapi Satchiputra Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasya Graja Madhupurim Maturim Gostavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasam Prapto Jasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Guruntan Matosmi Sri Srimad Bhagavat Padambuja Madhusharot Sabhaishat Padai Nikipta Marabindavascha Parito Brashta Mukhat Gunjitai Yatne Kinchidi Hahritam Nidhurparo Srayortina Tanmaya Buyo Buyo Ito Rajangsi Padasam Lagnani Te Shambhaje Ananda Lila Maya Vigrahaya Himava Divyachavi Sundaraya Tasmai Maha Prima Rasapradaya Chaitanya Chandraya Namo Namaste. Today's the appearance of Paramananda Vidyaratna, right? Appearance, eh?
Disappearance?
Excuse me. Disappearance. Paramananda Vidyaratna, Srimad Bhakti Gaurava Giri Maharaj, great disciple. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Guru Maharaj said the pet disciple of Srila Saraswati Thakur. He came when he was 13. And he said he's either first or second disciple on top of it all. You know. And he traveled with Srila Saraswati Thakur and they went on Brajamandal Parikrama and elsewhere, like in his inner circle. And Saraswati Thakur had so much affection for him. And that we recall the line in Srila Guru Maharaj's birthday prayer offering to Srila Saraswati Thakur. Five verses, of which the last line on each one is Pranamamicha Charanantika Paricharaka Sahitam, that we don't worship Guru in isolation, but that means along with his servitors, associates, those whom he holds dear. And this is announced at the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the Abhideya Sloka, which is telling you how to get there, how to get to the fruit, prayojan tattva. Prayojan, fruit, the, you know, nigama kalpataror galitam palam, shukamukhadam ritradavasamyatam, pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavuka. So we're told Vedanta, the Vedas are the kalpataru. Right? Because this is not just many, many random things that are fascinating and interesting, But there has to be, they're all connected. If we do not see how they're all connected, then we'll be confused or bewildered. And that means indirectly that we're not paying attention to Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav, because they're moving in parallel lines in a particular direction. Right. Shruti Bir Vimrigyam, the Vedas are going this way, the Brajagopis have that thing. No, but the Vedas, they're so great, and all these sages, and you're saying, yes, they're pointing you in the direction of the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani and her girlfriends and their assistants, the Brajagopis. What everyone may aspire to, they have that and they can give that. So, the Vedas are compared to Kalpataru, desire tree, the wish-fulfilling tree. And as we see today, looking at, you can use a tree for various purposes, right? You can build a house, make a table, a chair, and maybe in some instances, that's the best use. Right? But then we see, we have the mango tree, the champak tree, so many other trees. Right? To use, I don't know anyone who's making chairs out of mango trees, because that would be like not only nonsensical, or it would be offensive. No, the mango tree produces this incredible fruit. Don't make a chair from that. Right? It's not firewood. So when we say the Vedas are the Kalpataru, that interestingly, unlike other theistic systems, right, we could say they hopefully, for the most part, deal with theistic concerns. Right? Although in some we find almost their, they're not tainted by philosophy. They only have some moral considerations predominantly. But the Vedas, being the desire tree, that means, well, you say, well, I have all kinds of desires, mundane, spiritual, and everything in between. And the Vedas say, we got a plan for that, right? Wherever you are, whatever your situation is, tama, raja, sattva, whether you're in tamagun, in the predominated by the mode of darkness, ignorance, raja, passion, sattva, goodness, we have a way for you to march out of maya toward Vaikuntha. There's a path forward, wherever you are. Because we see, even our own circle, people are no two people are alike. Guru Maharaj says no two atoms are alike. He takes it to an extreme. You're like, really? He's saying, well, if you look at them very closely, you'll see this one's a little different than that one. Right? So everything is unique. All beings are eternally unique. And they're at different stages of, subjective evolution and karmic circumstance. There are some general prescriptions, but still there are tailored descriptions as well. But so in Veda, as an overview, they, whatever it is you want, they're the Kalpataru. You want the spiritual, the highest spiritual, they got that. Right? You want the mundane. They have a way that you can deal with the mundane and still it'll end up through regulation, provide a path forward. Right? So there are all these different things you can do with that tree. Right? And like I said, like the mango tree, you could decide to chop it down and use it for firewood. You could use it for that purpose, but that would be unfortunate. So in approaching the Vedas, isn't it Tri Guna Vishaya Veda? They're mainly dealing with the modes of nature, actually. Right, with Tama, Rajasatva. But we find in the Bhagavatam, those first three slokas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Swarup Damodar revealed to him that they should be seen as Sambandhagyan, Abhideya, and Prayojan Tattva. Right? Sambandha, understanding what is what and its perspective. Sanatana Goswami Prabhu is the Bhakti Siddhanta Acharya of Brihad Bhagavatamritam. You see, systematic gradation of the unfolding and development of Krishna consciousness. To a very general level, to more specific, until at last. And part one ends the same way part two ends. Asa maho charanayinu jisham ahangsham. With the aspiration to get the dust of the holy lotus feet of Radharani and Braja Gopis, which means the service connection, right? It's not, there's literal dust, metaphorical dust, but when we're talking about literal dust in terms of Chinmoy substance, what should it mean? It means a particular plane of consciousness. They want the least, like, bring me in connection with that in the least way, and that'll be infinitely, an infinite upgrade for me. From whatever my position might be. They're so exalted, so noble, so high. Right. So, in the beginning, then, and what is the Prayojan Tattva? Kalpaturu Galitam, Shukha Mukhadam, Pibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, the Rasa, Madhura Rasa. Right. So, that fruit, that, so what is, oh, he's saying, Nigama Kalpadru Galitam Palam, Paul, saying, so these Vedas that tell you anything and everything you need to know and whatever you might want to do, whatever your aspirations are, the essence of that is in Vedanta, which is compared to Veda Pushpa, the flower. And I remember being at the Sevak Bhavan in Navadvip, and I'd open up the shutters on my window, and right outside were these mango trees. But at first, I didn't know it was a mango tree. But staying there for an extended period of time, gradually, you saw these, like, flowers come. You know, and someone said, it was a mango tree. You know, and being impatient, I was like, where are the mangoes? They go, it's not mango season. It will come gradually. And we learn something from that about the development of Krishna consciousness. We hear so many things about the fruit. People are attracted by the fruit and anticipation of, and the fruit. But how you go from seed to fruit, bhakti lata beads to, you know, bhava, you know, the bhavankur to prem, and the prem latika, that may take some time. Understandably so. So look out that window and see that flower on the mango tree. Vedanta is the flower, the Veda Pushpa, the flower of the Kalpataru, the wish fulfilling desire tree of Veda. Right? So, and we know what's in the flower? What do we call it? Floral essence. So it's a very appropriate example. In there, whatever this tree has to offer has been condensed into a floral essence. That's an amazing thing, actually. Right? And we know the aromatis and aromatherapy and all, they take this floral essence, and even a drop of this, right, is a very potent, valuable substance. Right? And they'll say, you know, don't put it direct. You need to dilute or have, what do they call the oil? Carrier. I think it's called a carrier. You put a drop of the essence in the carrier and then it comes to you. All these things are very, you know, interesting in a comparative way. So I'm saying Vedanta is the flower, the floral essence of the Vedas. Look how concentrated it's become. But what does the flower give way to? The fruit. When you see the bud comes out, and then there's this fruit that also takes a little time in manifestation, but ultimately it's producing this, like the mango tree. So you look at the tree and you think, like, how could that produce a mango? So people look at the Vedas, you know, and say, and you worship Indra in this way, and Agni, make sure to say Swaha at the end, and you know, like, and you know, like, and all, and you know, but like, what does it have to do with Krishna? Like, when you look at that tree and go, how does this thing produce a mango? I don't get it. Are you sure? You look at the Vedas and go, like, so this is supposed to be all about, where's Krishna? Where's the mango? I don't see it. Right? Because you don't understand systematically how this is, the veins and the DNA of it, spiritually speaking. So then it lasts, so when that mango comes, and then what do you understand at that point? That all along, this is the purpose of the mango tree, is this. Not to be used for firewood or shade or to make a chair or any other thing. It was to produce this mango. And to use it for any other purpose is, what would be the right word?
Travesty.
A travesty. There you go. Right. So, and once you've, and of course, and those who have tasted those mangoes, say, how could we have thought of anything else? Right. So, that's the Prayojan Tattva Sloka. The first one, Janmadyasya Yataha, tells us, how to understand what is what, and the gradation about it. It gives many hints and foreshadowing about what will appear in the Bhagavatam. Muhyanti Atsuraya. It's bewildering to even the gods to try and understand Krishna, particularly the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna, his human-like pastimes. So, but what's the second sloka? Dharma projita kaita bhotra paramo nirmat saranam satam is telling us that the open secret of Krishna conception is that on the negative side, you cannot be envious of Krishna's devotees. But we can't just stop there and think like, oh, I'll try and remember that. Right? First offense of the holy name, Satam Nindam, the blasphemy of the devotees. Like, I'll try to avoid that. Yes, avoid that and try to remember that. But that's has a very neutral sound to it. Right? What is the inverse of not being envious of the devotee as like, appreciating them, singing their glories, right? And from the heart, genuine appreciation. In literature, there's a literary term. In English, they borrow terms from French, German, Latin, because sometimes it's just the most condensed way of expressing something. So there's a literary term called Schadenfreude, which happens to be a German. And what it means is to relish the suffering of others. Like when we hear about that, like I told him, when Aishwarya Rai was being promoted as arguably the most beautiful woman in the world, this Bollywood actress. And when came time to get married, found that her chart was Manglik, which means inauspicious, according to astrologers. So you think, what irony. She's like introduced as, you know, in her resume, who is she? She's the most beautiful woman in the world. And she's a Bollywood actress. And, you know. And what did we find out? That she's getting ready to get married. Her chart is inauspicious. You know, and what does it say? To what degree means that marriage to this woman will cause the annihilation of your family. Your family members are likely to die. Your dynasty will be finished. You're done. Right. So, just like Krishna consults Madhu Mangal when their backs are up against a kunj, like what to do. That's Madhu Mangal. Krishna's not a Brahmin, so he needs a Brahmin consultant. Madhu Mangal provides that and comic relief in the pastimes of Krishna. So we go, it looks like, what are we going to do? Madhu Mangal, well, according to the, you know. So they consult the Brahmins and they say, well, if you marry a people tree, they marry the girl to a tree. I've seen this at Dum Dum Park. Because these trees die early. So the idea, we marry the girl to a tree and then the bad things happen. Now she's free from that. Now she can marry a person. My India is great. So, but what I was saying, the reason I'm introducing this is because, and they worked it out, they did a bunch of rituals, left, right, and center, and everything's fine. Mother and child are fine. But the common man who's saying, like, I can't marry the most beautiful woman in the world, right? But when the common people hear, like, the most beautiful woman in the world has a bad chart for marriage, they kind of go, yes! You know, like, so maybe I'm not, you know, but at least there's that kind of schadenfreude, you know, someone else suffers, you know, glad it wasn't me, or the flight went down, we weren't on it, you know, or the exploiter, the karmic reactions finally surrounded him and devoured him, and there's a kind of joy in seeing others suffer, right? So, that's a fault. And interestingly, in the poetry of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the song Amar Jivana, it's such a beautiful song. Actually, it was recommended by Srila Saraswati Thakur. Like, when you get up in the morning, sing this song. That's where he says also, beat your mind with a shoe. Like, you know, just start whacking it and singing Amar Jivana. But Amar Jivana means like, my life. You know, my so-called life. And he's saying in there, and I refer to this as confessional poetry. And just as a sidebar, footnote, pop up, that Bhaktivinoda, we should never think of him. He's writing this for us, on our behalf, as the poets, writers, we're told by the literary experts that what we may not be able to express, we're unable to express. They can express nicely in song, literature, etc. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what, because some of you how should I pray? Amar Jivana, sing that song. Look at what it means. Go over it word by word, line by line. That's how you pray. And what I always, and then there's other songs too. Like one line that struck me once, I could never forget. He said, and this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, he says, there is no sinful activity I have not committed thousands of times. Then what should be our position? I would never do that. Yes, you would. Under certain circumstances, you would. That is my conclusion. Whenever I see something and I find myself thinking, I would, I realize, no, you would. Just under certain circumstances. Presently, maybe not, but under certain circumstances, you would. Someone did, you would. And if he says, there is no sinful activity I've not committed thousands of times, then what should I say? As I once did say to Srila Guru Maharaj, you know, about Kaviraj Goswami saying, Jagai madhai hoite muise papista. I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Lower than the worm in the stool. If you, take my name, you'll lose all your pious credits. You know, if you hear my name, you'll lose your pious credit. If you take my name, you'll fall down. You know, like, it's, I said to Guru Maharaj, I said, I understand. I said, but what if you, I mean, this is Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, you know, saying these things. I said, but Maharaj, what if you actually are more sinful than Jagai? Because when I read about what they did, it just doesn't go very high on the register with me. So I said, so what if you actually are more sinful than Jagai and Madhai? And two things he told me. First, he said, like, oh, such feelings have descended in you, you know, like. And then he said, it's not opposing. It's not, he's saying, oh, like, who are those people in the New Testament? They go in the temple, Pharisees. They'd sit in the, and like, oh, I am the most fallen, you know, and make a big show in front of everybody. He's saying, that's not what he's doing. He's saying, this is from his heart. He actually, like, feels this. It's real. He's giving vent to the feelings in his heart. He's achieved such depth of negativity. I mentioned when the, which we equate with humility, that when the devotees from, there's a place called Berdsk, correct? Right, near Tomsk, Berdsk, and they signed it, the Pirates of Berdsk, and they said Vaishnava Maharaj and Avadhut Maharaj always called us the Pirates of Berdsk, you know? So, and they said, and I remember, oh, Dhananjaya, but then Malini, Leela Shah, I'm looking at names, and I remember in January, because I used to like to go there in December and January, like as an act of solidarity, not like I'll just show up for the summer festival. So you, all of you go through the Siberian winter and everything and I'll show up, you know, in July. So I thought, just as a show of some camaraderie, solidarity, like I should go in December, January. And we're there and, what is it? Novosibirsk, right? I believe that's where they're from. I think. And the flat of Leela Shakti and Malini, and I'm looking out the window, and it is like an incredibly beautiful white. Everything's white. This is beyond. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Like, no, I'm the only person in Russia. Like, I go like, hey guys, it's snowing. Like, people don't even look up, like, you know. So I'm like looking out the window and everything's white. The trees are white. The ground is white. Just like, it's just white. Everything white everywhere. And I'm saying, oh, maybe like Sweta Deep or, you know. And I keep monitoring, like, what's the temperature? Minus 20, minus 25, like how low will it go? And I was thinking, Guru Maharaj kept saying that, singing the glories of negativity, that, and equating negativity with humility. Because in commonplace, New Age speak or type thinking, you know, it's always like, no, you got to be positive, you know. Look in the mirror and say, I love you. I hope no one here is doing that. The greatest love, learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all until you commit suicide, you know, but, or drown in a bathtub or something. So, but anyway, so they're always saying, and like poo-pooing negativity. But Guru Maharaj is saying, negativity has its value. And I thought, well, that's more scientific sounding. How do these lights work? You know, positive and negative current. And like, why is negativity always giving such a bad rap? Right? So he would say, he would equate negativity with humility. Like, so the greater the depth of negativity, the greater the expression of humility, as given and by Kaviraj Goswami. And remember, in this scenario, Krishna is the supreme positive, Radharani is the supreme negative. It's the negative that attracts the positive, right? Akarshan means like magnetic attraction, Krishna, Akarshan. And I remember being a child, the first time someone showed me magnets, which I thought were like the most amazing thing I'd ever seen up to that point in my life. You know, and there were two, and you'd go like this, and they go, whoom, you know, whoom, you know. But if you turn this way, right? So when you match positive and negative, you couldn't keep them apart, right? Like, you know, they like went like that and stuck together. But positive and positive, repulsive, right? Krishna, the supreme positive, if we are self-assertive, pratishta means self-assertion, actually, besides name and fame. And self-assertion, not, that's why we talk. Real pratishta, name, fame, we send a guru, right? We're promoting guru, not self-asserting. So to self, a finite self-asserting toward the infinite, is comical indeed, right? So the power of negativity. So looking out that window and I see all this, everything's white and the snow and the temperature keeps going down. And I thought, because I'd read about superconductors, that when certain ceramics approach absolute zero, which is very, I think centigrade, fair, it's almost the same. Somewhere around, let's just say minus 300, because remember, we're looking out the window, it's like minus 20, minus 30. And I think, wow, what's minus 300 like? You know, so it's a phrase, absolute zero. So they say certain ceramics, when they reach absolute zero, they achieve superconductivity. Which means, and what does that mean? Zero resistance to current, right? Like copper wires. Why do we use copper? You know, like, because it gets very hot or it gets very cold. It's a great insulator, right? Why do they put the rubber or plastic around the wires? Because they can get hot, right? And why do they get hot? It's a certain level of resistance to the current is shed in the form of heat, right? Am I saying it? You're an electrician. I mean, you know, understand electrical things, right? Just nod like you do, right? I know, you know. Did I say anything incorrect? I mean, it may not be 100% precise, but you get the idea. Resistance to current generates heat. Right, so they say when you take these ceramics down toward absolute zero, right, what do they achieve? Superconductivity on account of zero resistance to current. So then it occurred to me, Guru is talking about the depth of negativity. So metaphorically speaking, when those Vaishnavas achieve absolute zero, right, there's zero resistance on their part to divine current. And then what is the outcome? Superconductivity, the Chaitanya Charitamritam, other Shakta Vesh empowerment. Gurumayur said about Prabhupada, he wholly emptied himself of any other desire than the desire to fulfill the will of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He had zero resistance to divine current, otherwise known in Gurumayur speak as, Radharani's suggestion. So it comes down, he has zero resistance to that. He becomes a superconductor of divine current. So, and what would you expect a superconductor to do? Many others can come and plug into that. And then they become empowered, and you have the subsequent expansion of the Krishna consciousness movement. So Guru Maharaj, he said, this is not opposing. When Kaviraj Goswami says that, it's a genuine feeling, etc. So, but back to, so in the confessional poetry of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he's saying that, like, I meant no sinful activity I've not committed 1,000 times, but in another song, but in this song he's saying, and my happiness is seeing the suffering of others, Schadenfreude, and what makes me sad is seeing others are doing well. Right. So he wrote that, over 100 years ago. Right. So Srila Guru Maharaj said, the hallmark of second class devotion, medium position, what we call progressive, because second class almost sounds like an insult. What do you say? The progressive devotee is that their sadness, like kripam buri yat paraduka duki sanatana stvam prabhu mashrayami Raghunathas Goswami and his prayers, bilap kusamanjali and praise of Srila Sanatana Goswami Prabhu, saying, oh, you're so merciful. You're only suffering for you who are, ever immersed and relishing, Krishna Bhakti Rasa. But what appears to bring some sadness to your heart is seeing others suffer for a want of Krishna connection. That makes you feel a little pain in your heart. Right? So Guru Maharaj said the progressive devotee, when he sees if someone is going away from Krishna consciousness, that is a cause of sadness. That brings no joy to their heart. That is sadness. He said, and conversely, that when they see another devotee is making progress, that makes them happy. They're not like, oh, why are they getting so much mercy? Does Gurudev actually know? And about that, Guru Maharaj said, so you're asking that all of your flaws be photoshopped away and ignored, right? But when the same thing is happening to your brother or sister, God brother, God sister, like, the guru needs to be informed about the flaws in this particular personality, right? So he said, rather, the progressive devotee, when they see another, the God brother, God sister is making progress, they're happy to see that. It gives them some joy to their heart, some inspiration. Right? So when it says, nirmat saranam satam, not to be envious, that's clear. But the inverse of that is the praise. To appreciate pranamamicha charanantika paricharakat sahitam. We don't worship guru in isolation, but with their followers, whom they hold dear, we hold dear. Right? Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj, Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti, they all like this expression, if you love me, love my dog. Right? It's that same principle there. So when Guru Maharaj said, Paramananda Prabhu was the pet disciple of Srila Saraswati Thakur. To what degree? they're riding on a train, and the Paramananda Prabhu, he becomes hungry. But in India, there are little snacks on the train, but you have to wait to the station to get something a little more substantial. And in Guru Maharaj's words, he wanted halwa, which most devotees called halwa. Okay? So, but they can't do that. They'll have to wait to the next stop, which could be hours away, and who knows if it's even available there. But one yogi was traveling on the train, like a real one. And he heard that there's a great Vaishnava saint on this train. So he asked for darshan, and he was allowed to come and visit Srila Saraswati Thakur and get his darshan for his eternal benefit. But while there, he came to know, and the boy, imagine, it's so sweet, like the Paramananda Prabhu turning, Prabhupada, yes, Paramananda, I'm hungry, want some halwa. He's that, loving and affectionate with him. And then the yogi, seeing the plight of the boy and Saraswati, and wanting to do some seva. And when I say he's a real yogi, like Astasiddhi type, Prapti, Kamavashaita, Prakamya, Anima, Lagima, etc. Astasiddhi, eight types of. So Prapti means something's in another place, you can transfer that to where you are. It's not like you're making it out of thin air, but it's in another location, and you know the art of how to transfer that to here. So the yogi produced hot halwa for the boy. Paramananda Vidyaratna. and perhaps pleased Srila Saraswati Thakur in the process. See, that's where yogic power comes in handy in pleasing a Vaishnava. Right. So, and Guru Maharaj said once they're in Mathura on Brajamandal Parikrama. And remember, they have advance party and their logistics. They have to deal with all these things, like Paramananda Prabhu does now, carrying on the tradition. And so one day the advance car went, and they had to, you can imagine getting everything ahead, and they have a big group. And so Saraswati Thakur was still there and had no bedding. So Guru Maharaj said, Paramananda Prabhu came to him at night. And this tells you something too about how they revere, whose bedding can Saraswati Thakur sleep on? And Paramananda Prabhu, there's only one person he's going to know. It's Sridhar Maharaj. Because this needs to be pakka, pure. And so he came and said, Prabhupada, Saraswati Thakur has no bedding. I'm asking for yours. And Guru Maharaj said two things came to his mind. He thought, he felt really honored, that they're asking for mine. And he said, and that's the same thing that also bothered him, that, oh my God, I'm giving my bedding to Prabhupada Srila Saraswati Thakur. But that Paramananda Prabhu, Gurudev mentioned once, perhaps, I think he said, I don't know, it was three or four people did not have to knock on Saraswati Thakur's door to enter. Kunja Babu, someone else, and Paramananda, he didn't have to knock and then come in. He can just come in. So it's just telling us how intimate and how much love and affection is there. And so, but the thing really, and why I mentioned the last verse of the, I'll say that at the end, but what first comes to mind is Guru Maharaj saying, when they were on the Brajamandal Parikrama in Radhakunda, Vrindavan, that Paramananda Prabhu comes running to Saraswati Thakur. He's very excited because he was just at Radha Kund and Shama Kunda and saw the Diwan of Bharatpur and his family. They're doing like measured dandavats, which you may have seen. You know, you can circumambulate by walking, but another way is you stand. You usually you say some sort of, I mean, there are endless ways of doing it. Say some prayer, then bow down one length, move up the length, you know, they make a mark, move up the length of your body, stand up again, say a prayer, move up one length, and that way you can also circumambulate. So he saw this Diwan, I mean, basically like governor, highly positioned government official with his wife, relatives, whatever, and they're doing this. Because you might expect to see some babas doing that, or but that this class of people are doing this. But what impressed him was that, oh, for Radha Kunda and Shama Kunda, because he had the impression, as the disciples of Saraswati Thakur, what he instilled in them, that we're the devotees of Radharani, more than Krishna. We're devoted to Radharani. So he's saying, like, but they're also devoted to Radharani. So he came running back, like, Prabhupada, what? He said, you should see the Diwan of Bharatpur and his family, how they're doing dandavats around Radha Kund and Shama Kund. He said, they have so much respect for Radharani and appreciation. And Srila Saraswati Thakur said, yes, but their position and our position is different. He said, they revere Radharani because she is dear to Krishna. Like Yata Radha Priya Vishnu, you know, about Radha Kund. There are ways, different ways of interpreting it. So, oh, very dear to Krishna, so we revere her. Right? He said, in that conception, Krishna is holding the primary position and Radharani is in the secondary position. He said, there's a big difference between them and us. And what is that? He said, we worship Krishna and deal with Krishna because he is very dear to Radharani. So in our conception, Krishna is in the primary position and, Radharani is in the primary position and Krishna is in the secondary position. And then he said this, he said, we are Shuddha Shaktas. So to understand this properly, generally Shaktas and Vaishnavas are the opposition. Shaktas means like the Shivites and Mahakali Durga Devi section, and you have the Vaishnavas worshiping Vishnu, Krishna, Ramachandra, like that. And they're always in opposition. And there's apparent, you know, like almost like competitive and general dislike. All right. But now he's saying we're Shaktas, which would be like the opposite. But what he qualified as saying, we're Shuddha Shaktas. As they worship Mahakali and Durga Devi, we worship Radharani, Lakshmi Devi, Radharani, Sita, Mahishigan, the Lakshmigan, Lakshmis of Vaikuntha, the Mahishis, the queens of Dwaraka, and the gopis of Vrindavan, of whom Srimati Radharani is their leader. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhis, Tabbirya eva nijarupataya kalavi, Goloka eva nivasat akilatma bhuto, Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. As Krishna expands, Radharani expands. Actually, all of the Shakti tattvas are coming from her. That's how qualified she is, beyond her personal qualifications. And Guru Maharaj would say, even jivas come. Madhura Rasa Jivas from the halo of Radharani. So he revealed there, he's saying, she's in the primary position, Krishna's in the secondary position. I only began to understand this like an epiphany, coming in connection with the holy lotus feet of Srila Guru Maharaj. So my whole world shifted when I realized the implications of what he was saying. Because up to this point, let's just say I've been, you know, a member of the Krishna conscious movement for 10 years with all, you know, Krishna, we're the Krishna people, the Hare Krishna, 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 hey. And if that wasn't enough, Krishna, 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 hey, twice, sung by Mahaprabhu. But who are the people who love singing Krishna Naam the most? Radharani and the Braja Gopis, right? Generally, Krishna's not singing his own name until he's Mahaprabhu. You know? He's chanting the name of cows. He has these beads on his waist. He's devotees go, you know, that's how he does japa. Has these chinmoy beads hanging from his waist. But anyway, so when Guru Maharaj, for me, this was revelation, he's saying like, really, and kintu prabhoya priyavatasya, sakshad hari tena samasta shastre. All the shastras say, you know, understand, Guru is Krishna, right? Krishna is the Guru, like, got it. Then kintu prabhoya priyava, listen, what does it say? Kintu means but. On closer scrutiny, now we've got your attention. You're going in the direction of Krishna conception. Who is Guru? Prabhu Priya, the one who is most dear to Krishna. And then every disciple says, well, that's my Gurudev. And that's true, not untrue. But of all the gurus, right, no guru in the Gaudiya line will disagree that, you know, the Ujjvala Rasa Acharya, the ultimate acharya of all acharyas is Srimati Radharani. She's the guru of all gurus. And even Krishna, yeah, guru rupa harim gauram radha ruchi ruchavritam. The guru rupa of Hari, the guru form of Krishna, is radha ruchi ruchavritam, enveloped in the beauty, the heart halo of Srimati Radharani. When he wants to be guru in earnest, his acharya lila, he is enveloped by her sentiments. And that's what Tene Brahma, to transfer from one heart to the other. Right? So, Shuddha Shaktas, right? That we're ultimately worshippers of Shakti, of the potency. But that means Hladini Shakti. If you read the very last sentence of Srila Prabhupada's last purport in the Bhagavad Gita, and I'm mildly paraphrasing, it says, you know, after all that's been said and expressed, it says, thus, the jiva soul, its original position as a unit in the pleasure-giving potency. That means Ladini Shakti. So, that all of this bhakti siddhanta came streaming out from Srila Saraswati Thakur earnest request of Paramananda Vidyaratna, who later became Prabhu, later became known as Sripad Bhakti Gauravagiri Maharaj. And in this regard, Guru Maharaj mentioned, like, he liked, and this is why I read in the beginning and invoked the last verse or so of Sri Sri Prapanna Jivanamritam, which Gurudev used to say is his favorite verse of Guru Maharaj's, and in SoCal, because Bhante said, Maharaj, you know that verse? And I went like, no. And he goes, oh, Bob, like, you don't know, you know all these slogans and you don't know this one. I was like, so I thought, I have to learn this. If you ever ask again. And he could. It could happen. So, this Paramananda Prabhu, as Giri Maharaj, he would read Sri Sri Prapanna Jivanamritam every single day. This is like part of his sadhana, to read this, a chapter, every day of his life. And he said, I just draw so much from there. That was like his, part of his daily program. And of course, that verse, Sri Sri Mad Bhagavad, and we say this in his remembrance and in honor of the divine substance that has descended to us through Srila Guru Maharaj, but and invoking his pastimes with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So there, you know, Sri Srimad Bhagavat Padambuja Madhu Shadotsabai Shatpadai. That Guru Maharaj is saying, what is this book you've just read, Sri Sri Prapanna Jivanamritam? It's a compilation, a collection. He studied all the scriptures, you know, Anukoyasya, Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya, under the Saranga, six limbs of Sharanagati, divided in this way. Here's statements directly from the Lord, from his devotees, from Mahaprabhu. Like, and I mean, it's extraordinary. And there are some original verses. I quoted one of them, the Guru Rupa Harim Gauram. So, but now it's concluding. And then he said, so what is this that I've presented to you? He's saying, the devotees of the Lord, and we should include Sri Paramananda Vidyaratna, Sripad Bhakti Gauravagiri Maharaj, as one of them. He said, they are like bees relishing this Bhagavat Amritam. Right? And that's the word Shatpadai, means six-legged. So it's a poetic expression that indicates bee in Sanskrit. Shat means six, padai means feet, the six-footed. The devotees are like that. That means bee. It's a beautiful way of saying bee. But he's saying, but what is it? Sri Srimad Bhagavat Padambuja, Padambuja, Madhotsava. Madhu Madhotsava, it's a honey festival for the bees, this Bhagavat Katha. We see to talk, to glorify the devotees. The Bhagavatam told us in the beginning, that's what this is about. If it says on the first line of the first sloka, then you can understand thematically consistent. With Srila Guru Maharaj is saying, Yadamiya Mahima Bhagavatam, Sri Bhagavatam Katayam, Pratipatam Anubhutam Apya Labdavideya, Tadakila Rasamurti Shamalila Avalambam, Madhura Rasadi Sri Radha Pada Padmam Prabhadye. The book of Krishna is about Sri Radha, the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. That is where you achieve connection, service, everything with Krishna. You'll get no greater quantity and quality of Krishna than in service to her holy lotus feet. That's what this book about. So on the first page, it's not just saying, and by the way, to understand this, you shouldn't be envious of devotees.
No.
All right, general statement. Then higher devotees, you're going higher, narrow. As connotation increases, denotation decreases. Who's the supreme devotee of Krishna? Srimati Radharani. Then you reread the statement and saying, you will not understand this book if you have even a remote trace of envy towards her. So for those who are, you know, mad in praise of Krishna and they're allegedly great devotees, if they do not sing the praise of Srimati Radharani and her servitors, it's not true. It's fictitious devotion. They have a remote Krishna conception, not anything up close and personal. So not only should you not be envious of her, you should sing her praise. Yadamiya mahima sri bhaga yadigora nahoita tabiki hoita kamari daritam dehe radhar mahima prema rasasima jagata janata ke. Why Mahaprabhu descended in this world is to sing the glories of Radharani. Right? Himself personifying what was indicated in the the first sloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, I'm saying, so these devotees, they're madly relishing this Bhagavat Katha, which means of Krishna, his devotees. And what's happening in the like, they're like, we see they're so mad for the nectar and the flowers. Gurudev liked to quote perhaps this Ravi Thakur line about, like, I was so, you know, I was so busy collecting, and I didn't like appreciate the beauty surrounding me. Like, we wonder, like, you know, I mean, the scientists will say, and it's the bright colors of the lotus which attracts the bee to, you know, like on the, you know, Nat Geo or the Discovery Channel. But really, so then they're like, bringing this nectar. So Guru Maharaj is saying, like, with that kind of, they're madly, much chitta, madgata, prana, boryantas, parasparam, katayan, chastamam, nityam, tushyanti, cha, ramanti, cha. Krishna, nutshell sloka, Bhagavad Gita, saying, the devotees, how they get together and they talk about me. And this is their food. It's like they're feasting on Harikatha. Guru Maharaj says, Tushanti cha ramanti ta. Tushanti means they're very satisfied and happy doing it. But ramanti means even erotic pleasure, the intensity of erotic pleasure they experience in this. It's not just some joyous conversation, although it is. Right? And he's saying, even to that degree. So in this mad relish, he's saying drops of honey, the maru madotsav, the honey's falling from their mouth. They're just, and seeing, so what I'm doing is, I have my hands cupped here, something falls, the mouth of this Vaishnava, that different nectarine, and I've gathered that. And that's what I'm presenting to you in the pages of Sri Sri Papanajivanamritam. Hence, why Srila Gurudev liked that sloka so much, and why Paramananda Vidyaratnam Prabhu, Srila Bhakti Gaurava, Giri Maharaj read it every single day of his life, and today is his Tirobhav.